Blog Talk Radio.
Koda, Mojuba Asheda, Mojuba Aluwa Mi, Apolabi Pega, Mojuba Araba Mi, Adesanya Awuyade, Mojuba Ogute Compound Ode Remo, Mojuba Baba, Mojuba Yeye, Mojuba Egun, to all the God children, Mojuba Egun to all the Babalawos, the Ears, Mojuba Egungun to all the chiefs, Mojuba Egungun to all the Awos, Mojuba Egungun to all those that are listening, who are tuned in. We give praise and thanks to the Most High. We say Ashe, 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 Ashe,
Ashe,
Ashe,
Ashe. Welcome to Sign of the Times, everyone. This is Queen Tahira. Sign of the Times is brought to you by the UAC, the United African Coalition for Justice and Human Rights, and New Power Radio Network. We began the UAC after the unjust Zimmerman verdict of July 2013, and we invite you to continue to support us and our sponsors. Manhood, Race, and Culture, headed up by my co-host, Dr. James Jones. You can find Dr. Jones on Facebook as well as on the World Wide Web at manhoodraceculture.com. Also, please support Arlie Gordon of Unity Design, and Unity is spelled U-N-I-T-E-E. You can find Brother Arlie on Facebook and on the World Wide Web at unitydesign.com. And last but not least, we want to always remember to never forget our beloved brothers and sisters who are behind enemy lines and the families and loved ones and friends that they represent. So please reach out to Unheard Voices, the Free Alabama Movement, and the Free Ohio Movement, respectively, on Facebook and on the World Wide Web at FreeAlabamaMovement.com and FreeOhioMovement.org. So today we are going to do what we could have done part one of last night. However, my board was acting as though it did not want us to. At least that's what I'll say. So tonight we're going to hear from Decarcerate Louisiana, particularly the Angola prison, because on Tuesday, May 8th, prisoners throughout the state of Louisiana began a peaceful protest, cease and peace work stoppage, to protest the inhumane conditions, ill treatment, and lack of rehabilitative services available to them, which are identified in the Louisiana Department of Corrections regulations. The circumstances and conditions that have been allowed to fester in these oppressive in this oppressive environment do not allow for rehabilitation, but make sinking into oppression inevitable. We want to prove that we can change and that we can become productive members of society, says a person from Decarcerate Louisiana. There are circumstances that occur in poverty-stricken areas that do not create conducive environment for learning and development opportunities. A lot of people you see in today's prisons are simply a product of their environment, he says. The blight in many neighborhoods create environments where hustling occurs all too often out of necessity. The only people who are really being held accountable are the victims and the so-called criminals. Where is the government's responsibility for creating this environment? We demand immediate reparative and restorative justice. And these are their demands from Decarcerate Louisiana, and there are six of them. Number one says, we believe that all living human beings are created equal and have inalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, regardless of their social status. Two, we believe in human rights and human dignity, and that government has a fundamental obligation to protect all its citizens from slavery and human degradation. Three, we are demanding a national conversation inquiring how state prison farms across the country came to hold hundreds of thousands of people of African descent against their will. Four, urging that local, state, and federal governments currently hold hundreds of thousands of African Americans on prison farms across the country be investigated for antebellum criminality, involuntary servitude, and slavery. Five, we are demanding an end to the systematic oppression and exploitation of prisoners and their outside family and supporters for profit. Six, we are demanding classrooms for our education and rehabilitation, not slavery. And you can reach out to Decarcerate Louisiana a few ways. On Facebook as Decarcerate Louisiana, they do have a website, decarceratelouisiana.com. And you also can message them at decarceratelouisiana@gmail.com and a message number of 225-627-3554, 225-627-3554. So tonight we're going to hear directly from brothers from the state of Louisiana, particularly Angola Prison. They are on a peaceful protest, work stoppage, and definitely could use our support. So I've got a caller in queue. I'm going to go ahead and open up this mic real quick before we get started. Greetings. Last four digits, 5870. Welcome to Sign of the Times. Who are we speaking with? 70, your mic is open. Okay, well, maybe they pushed one by mistake. We'll come back to them later. But in the meantime, please, again, write this information down, Decarcerate Louisiana on Facebook, website decarceratelouisiana.com, decarceratelouisiana.blogspot.com, and email decarceratelouisiana@gmail.com, and message number 225-627-3554. We'll be back in about, this is about a good 30 minutes, y'all, so please listen in. Thank you. Greetings, everyone. This is Queen Tahira from Sign of the Times Block Talk Radio. We have a crisis in the state of Louisiana when it comes to our brothers and sisters who are behind enemy lines. As we have been discussing the past few weeks with Decarcerate Louisiana, we've had Brother Malik the God on, as well as Alonzo Cassino, talking about the things that they are experiencing and the information and facts that they can use to substantiate the overt oppressive conditions in the penal system in the state of Louisiana. So we have a crisis going on. I have a caller on the line now. Greetings, brother. Welcome to Sign of the Times. Please introduce yourself to the listeners.
My name is Arthur King, and I'm a prisoner at Angola. And right now we are doing a work stoppage, and I have summed it up to a list of 6 demands. So if I can explain it now, I could. Can I explain and list the demands now?
Yes, please do.
Okay. This work stoppage is about prisoners standing up for their rights, standing up for their human rights, and I have summed it up to a list of 6. Okay, number 1, we believe that all living human beings are created equal and have inalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, irregardless of their social status. Number 2, we believe in human rights and human dignity, and that government has a fundamental obligation to protect all its citizens, irrespective of social class, from slavery and human degradation. Number 3, we are demanding a national conversation inquiring how state prison farms across the USA came to hold hundreds of thousands of people of African descent against their will. Number 4, we are urging that local, state, and federal governments who currently hold hundreds of thousands of people of African descent on prison farms across the country be investigated for antebellum criminality, involuntary servitude, and slavery. Number 5, we are demanding an end to the systematic oppression and exploitation of prisoners and their outside family and supporters for profit. This is the last one. Number 6, we are demanding classrooms for our education and rehabilitation, not slavery. Okay, so this is what our work stoppage is about in Angola Prison, which took place this morning. And we just want to be sure that the public understands that our movement, our work stoppage is not a matter of violence, just inmates just riding and just, you know, and looking for trouble. This is not what this is about. This is about human beings come together and standing up for humane treatment. Even, okay, if we have laws down here in Louisiana, and take, for instance, Louisiana Revised Statute 15-828. It says that persons committed to and in the physical custody of the Department of Corrections shall be treated in a humane manner, and the department shall direct efforts toward the rehabilitation of such persons in order to effect their return to the community as promptly as practicable. However, and that's Louisiana law. However, the state has been failing to put funds towards these programs. So what has been happening is that a majority of the prisoners are just being warehoused, and we're just sitting in the cells or in a dormitory with practically nothing to do, watching TV, Jerry Springer soap operas, stuff like that. Or if we're not doing that, they may be calling work on for us to go out and work for 8 hours a day. And so the guys, you know, are becoming aware, you know, of their humanity, of their rights, and that we deserve better treatment than just working us. And you know, there's, you know, at the end of the day, you know, there's nothing to show for it. There's no benefit. It's no rehabilitation in it, you know. And so that's our call. That's what we're standing up against. We're standing up against slavery against involuntary servitude.
Now, you know, one of the things that we want to be clear about, Retta, is that, you know, this is not people who are living in the lap of luxury and are making more demands on the system. I think sometimes the public has the wrong impression of what an average day is like for our brothers and sisters who are behind enemy lines. So the work stoppage, was there something that happened prior to that alerted, I guess, if you will, the brothers and made them in support of something like this?
Yes, yes. Okay. Well, the Incarcerate Louisiana is our movement and our organization. And our organization has a number of flyers and brochures that's been circulating around a prison that's spreading awareness about our human rights, about human dignity, and us just, you know, standing up for ourselves for better treatment. And so the guys have been sharing the flyers and brochures with other fellow prisoners, with their family and friends, and there's just been a lot of discussion going on about the need to stand up for our rights, you know, because we still living, you know, we human beings, although, you know, we people make mistakes, people, you know, make poor choices, wrong decisions. The understanding is that despite poor choices and wrong decisions we have made, we, because the state have chosen to keep us alive, we believe that we are human beings and that we want to do something better with ourselves. And the law supports us. The Louisiana law supports us. It clearly states that everybody committed to the Department of Corrections shall be treated in a humane manner and are entitled to rehabilitation.
That's right. That's right. So ultimately, you know, what would victory look like? You know, considering the demands that you put forth, what would victory look like, and what would, I guess, reparations look like for the brothers who are making this demand?
Okay, victory would look like this. Okay, first of all, we looking for a system that would put towards money, put more public monies toward rehabilitation, toward more classrooms inside the prison, such as, you know, classrooms that teach us skills. You know, the skills could be in leadership. The skills could be classes that teach us criminology, you know, and criminology gets into the root of helping us to understand why we went on this path, you know, why we took the wrong path, you know. So instructors are needed to help engage us in such a way that we would be able to start to think about crime and the root of it. And so we need instructors to help teach us about community building. And so, you know, and with instructors like this, we will begin to, hold on for a second.
That's okay. Bear with me. He had to put the phone down for a second.
Okay, Queen Vanessa.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm back on. Sorry for the wait.
That's
okay.
Okay,
so, okay, you want to know how would that look like? Okay, as I was saying, we want community, we want classrooms, and we want instructors that would teach us community building and the different skills that will help integrate us into society. You know, so, you know, we want to learn how to think like planners, like developers and environmentalists and so that we could be able to have some input on what it takes for people to thrive, what resources and stuff we need in our living places that would prevent crime, that would give people a chance to be able to get out in a community and help rebuild.
Ashe, you, wow. Can you talk about some of the everyday experiences that are going on in the state of Louisiana that make this protest necessary? Because as you said earlier, according to their regulations and the Department of Corrections, according to their rules, if no one says anything, people have a tendency to think that everything's okay. So I really need you to be open about some of the things that you all have experienced. And was there something that happened today specifically that you want to share with the listeners?
Okay, if I understand you correct, the protest is guys are fed up. You know, we want better treatment. We're human beings, and we want people to understand that we could change. You know, we want people to understand that poverty, lack of education, economic opportunities from a lot of these places that we come from have deprived us of the opportunity to be productive citizens. You see, and so there are black press newspapers that I read, like the San Francisco Bayview, the Louisiana Weekly, and that's a local paper down here. And the word is put out about the impoverished environments that we come from. So we just want people to be able to, you know, look at this, to take that into consideration that poverty is a problem. Lack of education and economic opportunity is a problem for us. Right. And people that live in those conditions are a product of their environment. And so that has to be looked at when we're thinking about issues of crime and justice, you know, because if, you know, again, you know, in these poverty-stricken areas, we have a lot of poverty-wage jobs. So people is struggling from, you know, day-to-day to make a living. You know, we don't earn the type of income the mass majority of people that live in these impoverished-stricken areas to be able to afford a home without the hassle of renting and borrowing, to be able to afford a car without the hassle of renting and borrowing, to be able to sit money to the side for our children's college education, you know, so it's rough, and we just don't, resources is just not there for people to be able to be connected like it's promised in the preamble of the United States Constitution would say that we the people, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare. Well, the general welfare of all Americans is not being promoted. We do not live in a perfect union. We don't have a perfect union. There's places that you can go to in almost every state, and you can see that in some areas there's what you call, you have more resources there. You have more opportunities. People are more connected. There's no poverty. There's no blight. There's other areas that you can go to, and you can see that this is a ghetto. You know, there's no resources. Where are the resources? Where you know, our schools is, you know, overcrowded. For one, we have a lot of substitute teachers. The teachers is underpaid. So it's just a lot of stress, you know, on the people that live in these areas. And so, you know, people end up turning to, you know, crime. We become desperate, and we begin to take drastic measures to survive, to cope. And so, and there you have it.
Well, let me digress for a second and tell you what happened here in my city about a week ago. We had a sister who was on her way into her apartment and asked the person that was distributing his goods, if you will, in front of her building to move. And what this brother did was proceed to beat her in the face with a brick. And so there are many people who have the opinion that if you do the crime, you have to do the time. How can we get people to fully understand that, one, you know, it's true when the circumstances and the opportunities to develop educationally and professionally are imbalanced? Right. What you get at the end of that is not going to be what it would be if we had the same type of resources that other people have. And what is so upsetting is that when we look at these kinds of issues, they're really quick to point the finger at those who commit crimes versus those that created the environment that made it necessary. So how do we, one, create a balance in our neighborhoods amongst our people so that they understand that, you know, we have brothers and sisters who want to come back into society and who have something to offer, and two, not paint the picture as though we're not taking responsibility, if you will, you know, for actions that have taken place. And I yield back to you.
All right. That's right-wing. That's right-wing propaganda, right-wing philosophy that if you do the crime, you should be caught, convicted, and punished. If we look back in history in the 60s during Martin Luther King's era, Martin Luther King, the Black Panthers, and Malcolm X, we was protesting against not only the Vietnam War at that time, but we were protesting against a lack of jobs. We were protesting against poverty during that time. And so the government at that time was trying to make it look like that the violence that was erupting amongst Black people in the cities, that it should be looked at that way, you know, that this was just people that was just rioting, that was just causing trouble and things of that nature. And so after so many speeches given by King, Martin Luther King Jr., and all the different movements at that time, we was able to get Lyndon B. Johnson to do an investigation of the crime and violence that was erupting in the cities at that time. So Lyndon B. Johnson set up what you call the Kerner Commission, I believe, to investigate crime. And so his task force came back and revealed that the root of the problem of the domestic violence and crime that was occurring, not because people was just bad. It was all about lack of resources. It was it was poverty. It was people just being left in places, you know, that and to just, you know, without no help, without no support by the government, you know. And so from there, pressure was mounting, and pressure was mounting to Lyndon B. Johnson created the Great Society, and with that came a lot of funding start being sent to the states to create welfare programs. Funding was being sent to programs for to set up jobs, job training programs. Money was being set for programs to just to help people to lead productive lives. And so, you know, right now today, well, let me go back a little bit. Let me go back a little bit. So that's what we was doing. So at that time, but it seems as though at some point, Barry Goldwater and George Wallace came along, and they came, and when they came along, and this was kind of like right after Martin Luther King got assassinated and the social change movements at that time was being persecuted. And so the Republicans took the national spotlight, and they began to change the conversation from one that was looking at the violence and crime in the cities from being a social problem. They changed it from being looked at that way into being looked at, you know, as okay, if you do this crime, you should be called, convicted, and punished. It began to start to change, and so they began. Nixon took this philosophy, this right wing philosophy, all the way to the White House, and so. And he began to play on people's fears and make them start looking at the damage that was done to them, you know, the personal damage that was done to them as a result of the violence, the crime, or whatever the case may be. And so from that point, you know, without our leaders being able to counteract these racist right-wing propaganda and what they were saying, it led into our people being able to, you know, their minds being changed and wanting to see prisons and jails as a solution to the problem. And so I think that in order for that to change, we need more awareness. We need more awareness so that people can start looking at the root of the problem of crime and where this root from, where does this come from? We need another task force to investigate crime so that people can look at both sides of the story. They can see the whole picture. You know, the right wing propaganda, if you commit the crime, you should do the time. You know, look at that. But also we want people to see the other side. We want people to see why is this happening. You know, and so we believe that once people begin to see this, then they will have a more well-rounded view. They will have more information, and you know, to be able to make a better assessment of what's going on here.
Mm-hmm. Ashay, I definitely agree. And nobody can tell your story better than you. Nobody can walk in your shoes better than you. And so we definitely support you being able to, you know, get this out. How can we support you? What do you need us to do?
To just basically get, okay, with the workshops we have, and we just want people to know that we're not in here just fucking, just deciding, you know, that one day we just want to just get up and we just want to just tear the prison up. You know, no, that's not what this is about. You know, I laid out the 60 man, and so we are demanding justice. And so we would like to have a spokesperson to be able to communicate this to the public, you know, and you know, in a press release or something, so that people will understand that our cause is just. And even with this interview we're doing, you know, it just goes to show you the need for classrooms and stuff, because even with me participating in this interview, I'm doing the best I can, but, you know, listeners and even yourself can see that I need some more practice with public speaking. And they have classes like this up here. But I've been in the cell block almost like going on 15 years. I've been in the cell block. And so, you know, you guys can see my intelligence, but I'm having a hard time articulating it. I'm doing my best to get it out, but it just goes to show you when people are not, when we are not integrated, when we are not, you know, given a chance to participate in the different classroom settings to help us to be articulate when we speak in, you know, to help us to be able to, you know, understand what path we went on and why. We need to understand this. We need, instead of working in the field and picking crops and stuff, we need to be figuring out problems, you know, how to solve our problems, where we went wrong. You know, this is why we're put on earth. We're here to solve problems. But if we're not given a chance to solve our problems, then, you know, it's not good. It's not good for society. People are being released every day out of prison. You know, some people have prisons have life sentences. Some prisons have 1 year. Some have 2 years. Some have a few years. Some getting ready to go home right now today. But if they're not being rehabilitated, you know, you got some people that's being released right now and haven't had the opportunity to be able to, during their incarceration, to participate in classes to help them to be able to integrate into society when they go home.
Mm-hmm.
When they get out of here, you know, so that's a problem. You know, that needs to be corrected, you know, and so they may have people, even though I'm the founder of Decarcerated Louisiana, and I'm better in my writing than speaking because I write real good. And if I could speak like that, that would be real well. That would be great. But, you know, that's what we need. We need outside spokespersons to be able to help articulate this stuff, you know, real well to the public so that they can, so that the prison officials don't get away with trying to convince the media that we just in here just, you know, just acting crazy, just acting a fool, you know, and stuff like that.
Now, how do people find you? I know that you all have a social media page on Facebook.
Right. That's true, right?
Would you like me to create an email for you, or do you have a phone number that is available?
Yeah, we have an email.
Greetings, everybody. This is Queen Tahira. That's pretty much the gist of the conversation. This what follows is his contact information, which I'm going to try to come back to. Hold on 1 second.
/ Decarcerate Louisiana. Also, we have decarceratelouisiana.com, and we have decarceratelouisiana.blogspot.com.
Okay. You said Decarcerate Louisiana.
.com.
Okay.
That's our website, and we also have decarceratelouisiana.blogspot.com.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, now, how are the officials responding to today's work stoppage?
Right now, the prison officials are, we have wardens that's just, without coming to us and asking us what's going on, what the problem is, they have been coming now with sticks and just assault, just jumping on guys, just beating guys with sticks, spraying tear gas, and there's no need to beat guys. There's no need to spray the tear gas because no one is being violent. You know, we only want to talk and explain to them what our concerns are, what our demands are, and which I explained to you on this program. That's all we want to do. You know, if anybody, you know, is the criminal, it's these guys. It's the wardens. These are the guys that's criminals. You know, if there's laws that say that places restrictions on prison officials from inflicting cruel and unusual punishment on inmates. You know, and that's what that's amount to. The beating prisoners for unjustifiable reasons, just because we don't want to go to work, and it's a nonviolent work stoppage, or spraying gas just because we don't want to go to work. Why? When it's a peaceful protest.
Mm-hmm.
What's the need to spray gas for what? What's the need to bring sticks for what? What purpose is that going to solve?
Mm-hmm. Have they offered to negotiate or to talk with you all at all at this point?
Okay, right now I'm not sure because I'm in a different part of the prison. But as
mm-hmm.
soon as I learn more information, then I will communicate it and report it on our group page and let you guys know.
Okay. All right. Well, to give that information out again, it's Decarcerate Louisiana on Facebook, the website, decarceratelouisiana.com. Blogspot is decarceratelouisiana.blogspot.com. The email address is decarceratelouisiana@gmail.com. Is there anything else that you want to say in closing, brother, before we go?
Okay. We just basically, you know, want people to know that we are in solidarity with the people, and what I mean by that is we support workers' rights, we support tenants' rights, we support LGBTQ rights, disabled group rights, workers' rights, women's rights, because we see this as all of a human struggle, and so we all striving for a place where we all would be connected, where we all would, you know, live in peace and harmony and in satisfaction, and we all would be part of a loving community. So we know that when workers are not being paid fair wages, then that creates a problem in a home. You know, so of course we're in solidarity with workers when disabled groups or tenants are being discriminated against for whatever problem that causes stress, you know, in the places that we live. So we're in solidarity with all people, you know, irrespective of what race they belong to or color or what have you. You know, we all in a human struggle, and so we need as much support as we can get, and we believe that by working together, we're able to accomplish so much.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Sign of the Times. This is Queen Tahir. I'm going to go ahead and open up the mic. What you heard was direct testimony from a brother behind enemy lines at Angola Prison. In Louisiana, in reference to the work stoppage, the peaceful work stoppage that has been initiated by the brothers behind enemy lines. Well, welcome to Sign of the Times, King Dr. T. How are you doing this evening? Can you hear me? All right, maybe he pushed one by mistake. I'm going to go ahead and open up my co-host tonight, Dr. Jones.
How are you doing?
Welcome, Dr. Jones. I'm fine. How are you doing this evening?
I'm good. Sitting here listening intently.
Ashe. Yeah. This has been a eventful 2 days, to say the least. To hear over and over again these types of testimonies that, you know, one, solidify the things that we talked about. But to hear that things are just not changing, if anything, are progressing to get worse, to where, you know, our brothers are being forced to stand their ground, if you will, albeit their desire to be peaceful, they're not being treated peacefully, at being treated with the same manner of respect at all. So yeah, it's trying time, to say the least.
You know, most certainly. The thing for me, listening to the brother speak, the very last portion of what he was saying about the need for solidarity for persons across the spectrum. You know, one of the areas that I've studied is labor history. I was raised up in the academy by a Marxist. So I have some Marxist leanings and what have you. And one of the lectures that I give to my students is quite simply dealing with labor and the idea that that owners have no rights whatsoever, that workers are bound to respect. And I think that mantra needs to, in many ways, be spread even further to include every oppressed group, not just workers. This is the land of plenty, you know, when you're talking about this nation. And it's in many ways inexcusable to have such large populations of people incarcerated for what amounts to property crimes, nonviolent property crimes. And it's just as inexcusable and should be linked up. And I love the way that the brother linked these things up. It has to be linked up with the idea of worker rights. It has to be linked up with what Dr. King was talking about when he talks about the Poor People's Movement, that we're all inextricably linked with one another. And as one goes, the rest of us shall surely go. And I yield with that, Queen.
Ashe. Yeah, it was, for the companies and the profit to be so high and the cost to be so detrimental to us, especially, in our communities and in our families, it is abject slavery. If there's no way around it, there's no way to sugarcoat it, that for generations we've been duped into believing that these brothers and sisters are deserving of this kind of treatment, if you will, that because they, are perceived to be, bad people, the media does an excellent job of painting blue-collar crimes one way and white-collar crimes a totally different way. And it even comes down to, as the brother was saying, societal status, economic status, how you're treated. So there's no way around it. And at this point, Dr. Jones, it's like, what good, in my mind, would it do to continue to tell these people how bad they are when we already know how bad they are? Not only do we know how bad they are, they actually know how bad they are. But because, 45 has the mentality he does, that's the general mentality of this white male privilege we hear so much about. It's exemplified through what we see displayed through 45 and the actions or lack thereof that he's chosen to take. So, it's the dirty laundry that Brother Groves, so eloquently spoke about, that our society wants to pretend as though it's not there, to how they choose to correct and admonish and punish, people of color, especially. I'm frustrated with it, to be honest. I don't feel any more free than our brothers and sisters do behind enemy lines, because it's just a matter of, how, I guess, many games are played with us in society out here versus how many games are played with them, behind enemy lines. Either way it goes, none of us are truly experiencing life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness as it's described. So with that, I yield back to you.
Queen, you're absolutely correct in your summation. I what was crossing my mind when you were talking is this old Ghetto Boys song titled "The World is a Ghetto," where they talk about, regardless of where you go on the face of the planet Earth, that you're going to find oppressed people, you're going to find squalor, you're going to find filth, and you're going to find what has always been, and to be quite honest with you, is an increasing cavernous gap between the haves and the have-nots in this world. It's hard for me to even talk about the idea of an American populace being that dim-witted, that they don't, that they're not able to see exploitation when it's occurring. But a big part of that comes from the idea of miseducation, misinformation that is fed to people. You know, we have this current trend where you're hearing people talk about, you know, Trump's economic policies and the fact that the unemployment rate is at a record low. But we never really talk about how you figure out the unemployment rate, number one. And number two, we also never talk about the fact that these jobs that are being created are darn near minimum wage jobs, that people are not going to be able to have a decent living, you know, if they have to rely upon that solely. You know, we're dealing with what in many ways Karl Marx talked about when he said that, the most fatal flaw that humanity has is that enough is never enough. And when you have such huge concentrations of not only monetary wealth, but also political power and influence concentrated in the hands of so few, you're bound to have a situation where the masses of people are pretty much, regardless of if they're behind bars or not, they're going to be enslaved. You are beholden to some entities that you can't escape from. And what makes this even worse is that these entities have the ability to remove what should be an inalienable right, but which obviously isn't in any nation on the face of the planet Earth, and that is your very freedom. They're snatching people's freedom due to their economic status, due to their poverty, due to, you know, a whole lot of societal judgments. And I don't believe that there's anyone on the face of the planet Earth who would agree that enslavement is right for them. And if they can't agree that enslavement is right for them, how could they dare think that enslavement should be something that their brothers and their sisters are going to be experiencing? But they do that and believe that on a daily basis, even with the voluminous ironies that are apparent in that statement. And I yield with that, Queen.
Ashe. We're almost to the top of the hour. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Sign of the Times Block Talk Radio, brought to you by New Power Radio Network.
Hello, my name is Dr. James Thomas Jones III, and I am the author of an exciting new book titled Obruni, An African-American Odyssey Home. Most African-Americans have some desire to discover where they are originally from. Obruni is the story of my personal journey to find my ancestral home. Through a host of twists and turns, I must relate that I was able to have many of my most pressing questions regarding who I am and where I come from answered by some of the least likely sources. In fact, I was able to discover some surprising things during my trip to Ghana. If such things interest you, please support A Black Writer and visit Amazon.com and pick up your copy of Obruni, An African-American Odyssey Home, today. Thank you. Hello. I'm Dr. James Thomas Jones III, and I've just recently completed a manuscript titled Creating Revolution as They Advance, a Historical Narrative of the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. This work traces the demise of the nonviolent civil disobedience of the civil rights movement and the rise of both the Black Power era and Black Panther Party. Special attention is paid to Panther leaders such as Huey P. Newton, Bobby Seale, Fred Hampton, Eldridge Cleaver, Bunchy Carter, and Geronimo Pratt. This story is told through the view of the Panthers and details the horrific, underhanded attacks that the organization experienced at the hands of the FBI's counterintelligence program under the orders of J. Edgar Hoover. If you're looking for the true story of the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, pick up a copy of Creating Revolution as They Advance, a historical narrative of the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, on Amazon.com. Thank you.
Death is a multi-billion dollar industry. The cemeteries are full of people who've passed from a preventative illness. With the correct approach, you not only extend your chances of preserving your life, but you will improve the quality of your life with a natural approach. The earth provides energy healing herbs for the benefit of mankind.
Hello, I'm Amira Sankofa Kwali here at Ask Life Coaching Ministry. We're located at 1921 West Broadway. We've been in the healing business for over 20 years. To order my products, go to www.ask314life.com. I'm available 7 days a week from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Namaste.
Greetings and welcome back, everyone. Tonight's discussion is around the peaceful prison protest that's happening at Angola Prison. Through Decarcerate Louisiana, we were able to learn and hear firsthand from one of the brothers who is there at Angola about the conditions that are there and about what they desire to happen and their six-point platform that they are standing on, and I'll go ahead and read those six demands again. Number one, we believe that all living human beings are created equal and have inalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, regardless of their social status. Two, we believe in human rights and human dignity, and that government has a fundamental obligation to protect all of its citizens from slavery and human degradation. Three, we are demanding a national conversation inquiring how state prison farms across the country came to hold hundreds of thousands of people of African descent against their will. Number four, we are urging that local, state, and federal governments who currently hold hundreds of thousands of African Americans on prison farms across the country be investigated for antebellum criminality, involuntary servitude, and slavery. Five, we are demanding an end to the systematic oppression and exploitation of prisoners and their outside family and supporters for profit. Number six, we are demanding classrooms for our education and rehabilitation, not for slavery. So you can find Decarcerate Louisiana on Facebook. You can go to their website, decarceratelouisiana.com, decarceratelouisiana.blogspot.com, email decarceratelouisiana@gmail, and a message number where they can be reached is 225-627-3554. So welcome back, Dr. Jones.
All right, Queen, I'm right here.
Okay. Our caller has pushed one again. I'm going to go ahead and open up their mic. Last four digits, 5870. Your mic is open. Welcome to Sign of the Times. Who are we speaking with?
Speaking with Brother Eugene. How are you guys doing tonight, Queen and Dr. Jones?
Greetings, Brother Eugene. Welcome.
Welcome, Brother. Welcome.
Absolutely. I think it was – I got a couple things from that interview. Well, first of all, let me just say commend you for this platform for something like this, because obviously, you know, national media is not going to cover a story like this. So thank you guys for bringing this to light. But what was interesting and fascinating to me was that and I sent a couple of texts out about it – was about them organizing behind prison bars. And that was fascinating to me because you could pretty much understand the mindset of, you know, overtaking the system or challenging the system or, so to speak, busting the system. And to do such those type of things, you have to organize. So I would like to commend the brother for realizing that. And it was just a parallel that came to my mind that it's interesting that people can, you know, obviously organize behind bars, but we can't get our people to really organize outside and being free, so to speak. So that, you know, that came to me real quick. Two, he was talking about rehabilitation, and I really believe in that because, you know, everybody makes mistakes, some worse than others. And obviously, you know, I agree with what he was talking about, the Republican state of mind. You do the crime, you do the time. But sometimes the crime doesn't, you know, that time doesn't fit the crime. And, you know, it's been shown by factual statistics that we have.
Uh-oh. Okay, his call dropped. So I'm sure he'll call right back. I was looking forward to him finishing making his. Okay, we need that. Hold on. Okay, brother, you open.
Okay, yep, sorry. Yeah, my phone had dropped because I'm on the train. I was just saying that, you know, it was just interesting that he realized that, and, you know, obviously that they understood organizing. And then, you know, what really got my attention was when he was talking about the rehabilitation piece. And you can tell that he's been rehabilitating himself behind prison lines. And that's key because it made me correlate to myself in my own lifetime what's holding me back from not only rehabilitating myself, challenging myself to a new level. And so that was inspiring to see that he's not letting the environment overtake him. Mine and the thinking, the conceptualization of, hey, even though I'm here, this is some of the harshest circumstances I may face, I'm still going to push forward and to push myself to be a better me. And lastly, I would like to say that stories like this we need to be aware of that, because I think people, when they hear of prison sentences and prisoners and stuff, they don't think that they have rights. And I think that for him to really understand that and educate himself on that, and not only by him leading by example, the other prisoners are being educated by him leading. And so I think that's really prevalent in today's society, that, you know, he can understand it at prison, but to the people that's listening and the people that's not in prison, kind of imprisoning their minds to grasp that mentality and say, hey, if he can do it, I know I can. And I yield with that.
Ashe, I yield to you, Dr. Jones.
You know, I think you're absolutely correct that they should be applauded for the ability to organize behind bars. And it is something that has proven to be more than formidable to those of us who are, quote unquote, in the land of the free. You know, for some reason, and, you know, oppression is oppression and suffering is suffering. But for some reason, we have individuals who are not incarcerated who seem to believe that they're not living in an oppressive state, that they're not experiencing what could be characterized as the exact same types of oppression that those who are incarcerated, those who are, you know, being victimized on a daily basis are experiencing. It's a haughty arrogance that in many ways significantly weakens every struggle for liberation amongst working class and poor people. And until, you know, you get to a point where you really understand that when we're talking about these movements against oppression and where this oppression is coming, until people really take their blinders off and realize that they're not the exception to the rule, that they're experiencing maybe not the same intensity of oppression, but they are under an oppressive regime that is exploiting each and every one of us. Until they really get that through their head, there's not much that we can call upon them for. And for my money, it's one of the reasons why the movement for a black independent political party never really gotten much traction, because our people believe that they're really not that oppressed. And I yield with that, Queen.
Ashe, I'm going to leave you open 414. I'm going to go to the next caller. Last four digits, 8028. Welcome to Sign of the Times. Who are we speaking with?
Alan Gay.
Greetings, Brother Alan. Welcome.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is just wonderful that, you know, we are being enlightened about this type of situation, because we don't have the outlet. So, you know, again, you know, kudos to you and for pushing the envelope, but also enlightening, you know, the listeners of the situation. The things that I kind of wanted to touch on was that, you know, Brother Eugene talked about in regards to the ability to organize behind bars. And I remember when I was at the Schomburg Library and, on a research intern, Dr. Kamosi Woodard talked about that the civil rights legislation that was going to, you know, pretty much disarm legislation was written in a fashion in which racism will no longer be the word is escaping, but it would no longer be in your face. It would be basically, you know, guided or hidden behind the trappings of the law. You know, the ruling in Brown versus the Board of Education stated with all deliberate speed, and one hears the word deliberate and think, oh, well, yeah, you did that on purpose, so it should have been done with speed, but when you, I mean, you know, quickly, like swiftly. But when you look at it, it says, you know, deliberate is to take as much time as necessary in terms of getting what is stated to be done completed. So that was the first thing that came to my mind, is that these types of rules and these types of laws have been written to make us not even see the oppression that is covert and overt. That's the word I'm looking for, but that is overt within our faith. Now it's covert, and you have to actually convince people that they're being oppressed, crazy as that may seem. So the society was successful at institutional racism in that form. And the next thing was the brother talked about rehabilitation. I would challenge the brother, and he talked about how he didn't articulate it, but we all use the term rehabilitation or correctional as if something was wrong in the first place. Designed, they were absolutely correct to become criminals because they were put in a situation in the society that would basically make them prone to criminal activity. Now, I do understand that everybody has a choice, but it was part of the design. When we hear rehabilitation, that almost makes us think that, you know, a person can be made whole again. So the question is, what are they being made whole to? And we know how many offenders, when they come from behind enemy lines, tend to go back because of the systematic brainwashing and conditioning that allows them to feel as if that is a better way of life than it is on the outside. So when we talk about the term rehab, I just would like to say that, you know, really what those brothers are doing is pretty much, you know, building their initial selves. They just happen to have other trappings in their past that allow them to find themselves in unfortunate circumstances. But they're building their true self, and it's 9 times out of 10 because of the situations that are overtly in their face that they have no way to escape behind bars, which we can't see sometimes on the outside if we haven't been indoctrinated or liberated to understand information that shows us that we're not actually free, although we can walk and go as we please. And I yield with that.
Dr. Jones, you have a reply?
You know what? Don't really have a reply. I mean, I agree with everything that the brother said. You know, he's right and exact, as Khaled Muhammad would say.
Ashe, hold on. We've got another caller in queue. I'm going to go ahead and open them up. Last 4 digits, 1703. Welcome to Sign of the Times. Who are we speaking with?
Good evening. This is Brother Elohim. People stay away to catch the show. I'm a little under the weather.
Welcome.
I just wanted to chime in and just give you a little encouragement on the show. Keep it going. I like what you're doing. And also, I want to give Dr. Jones my number so he can text me the information on the book. I'm not in a position to write anything down right now. I got flipping the script, but I wasn't able to get your book because I don't know what I did with the information. So my number is 215-758-1703. So if you can text me information on your book, I'd like to purchase. And that's it. I just wanted to give you guys some encouragement. I like what you're saying. I like what you're doing. I love your show, okay? And I yield.
I don't have a pen or anything with me. So, Queen, if you could hook me up.
Okay.
Definitely.
Well, I got you. Okay.
All right. Thank you, brother. Our brothers who are in Louisiana have asked that those that want to offer their support, reach out to them, check out their Blogspot page, check out their respond to them by email. And I don't know about you all, but I'm, you know, really concerned about their safety. It's my understanding that them today go to work, and some of the assault included, you know, verbal assaults, racial assaults, and, you know, we know that any man, especially in circumstances where they're under this amount of pressure and trying to work, if you will, and negotiate with these entities from the perspective that they've been given. You know, we heard what happened to Brother Groves the other week when he simply filed a complaint against two COs for threatening him with the Aryan Brotherhood and threatening to have the Aryan Brotherhood, you know, kill him in the shower area. So we know that eventually this thing is going to turn into something ugly if nothing is done about it. And that's to be honest with you, my biggest concern is that I don't want to see any more of our brothers hurt or killed simply for speaking truth to power when, you know, ultimately a lot of them deserve to be free. They've proven that they have been rehabilitated. They've proven that they have something to offer to society. You wouldn't believe some of the phenomenal writings I've gotten as contributions to Bars Beyond Bars. I mean, these brothers are talented visually. I've gotten some drawings. I've gotten lots of spoken word. I've gotten case information, you know, from a lot of these brothers. And, you know, this turns from being a theory that we are being targeted in a manner that causes these numbers to be so high. But once you start to actually have evidence in your hands and you see so many stories after story after story, and, you know, just pleas for help, you know, from those who are on the outside, this is more than just a theory, you know. It's a definite conspiracy. And unless we do something about it, you know, my concern is that, you know, our brothers are going to end up being hurt simply because they're choosing to try to live. And so with that, I yield back to you all.
Yeah, this is Brother Eugene. I think, you know, another interesting dynamic that when he spoke, which was interesting to me, was when he spoke about the oppression of the wardens. And, you know, we all know that oppression is someone who obviously has power over you, but in an authoritative state. And so it was kind of interesting when he spoke about that and talked about the beatings. It reminded me of, you know, the police brutality that I see on the streets and still that occurs today. And it obviously does occur over, you know, the existence of time. And so it's just interesting that, you know, through different levels of, you know, systems, whether it be incarceration, whether it be in the financial institution, whether it be in the employment sector, whether it be, I mean, you can even go to, you know, housing. The different institutions, you're always going to have some type of oppression, you know, going on. And, you know, again, it, you know, it just makes me, you know, that much vigorous in attacking that, because I like to stand up. You know, I'm a, you know, fighter by nature. And so it sharpens the knife a little more, knowing that, you know, in every level of different industries, should I say, so that's, you know, firmly say, is that you have some level of oppression. And it's the common denominator in all of this, you know, too, is classism and racism. And so just pointing that out, and with that, I yield.
This is Alan Gaines stepping back in. No, I agree. You know, when Dr. Jones was speaking earlier and he talked about the Ghetto Boys song, The World is a Ghetto, it, you know, vibrated with me, and it talked back to my readings of Marcus Garvey and how he, you know, discussed when he went around the country, and he always saw the same thing, that black people were in positions of oppression, and wherever they were in the on the globe, other people were the ones that was doing the oppression of them. And, you know, just the things that he spoke about, but also listening to the interview, it, a lot of things are reverberating. And I, you know, to kind of piggyback on what's been said by, you know, everybody that's been chiming in, one of the things that I've been noticing is the situations are limitless. in regards to where you're going to find them. You know, the brother was actually in prison. Last week, I know we had a very good conversation about the comments that Kanye West made about slavery being a choice. And then this brother's talking about, you know, the inhumane rights and but the fact that he was in prison. Part of what Kanye talked about was being in prison, and he was saying that that is a term that he would have preferred to use. That got lost in translation because of how irresponsible he was with what he was attempting to say. But then you have the depictions of these situations in the form of art by the guy Donald Glover, who goes by Childish Gambino, and his, you know, video "This Is America," and how he talked about those things that were happening and all the violence, regardless of, you know, where you found yourself, the violence, the oppression, the lack of education, because he has the school kids dancing, and they'd rather do that than be educated. Then at the very end, it was, you know, the video culminates with his brother just taking off running, and he's being chased by every form in society, whether it be death, police, you know, everything was just taken, was just chasing him. And, you know, that was just artistic expression of, you know, black life in America. And it's just funny to see that, you know, well, not funny, but the irony is that this brother who's in prison is organizing with something that we have a lack of outside on a mass scale. But there is a lot of organizing that is happening on a smaller scale, on a micro scale opposed to a macro scale. But these issues have just not escaped us. And, you know, we probably could go back in the time machine in 50 years, you know, prior, still be sitting around discussing these issues. And it's just astonishing that the more and more people are becoming woke, conscious, or revolutionary, and I do believe those are all three different things, we still seem to not be getting closer to the solutions to these problems. And I yield.
Brother, I need you to help me out with that. You said between woke, conscious, and revolutionary. Let's talk about that for a minute because, you know, that's resonating with me. Go into that a little bit for us.
Okay, well, me, myself, I'll just break down each one and I'll try to make it as plain as possible. When you wake up, you know, just think about going back to school when your mother was getting you up from school. They cut on that light, they call your name, and what you say, "I'm woke, I'm woke, I'm woke." Well, you are woke, you responding, but you ain't doing nothing. So we got a lot of people in this, you know, in this day and age that's woke. They responding, they talking, but they ain't doing nothing. They ain't doing nothing at all. Then you have, to me, conscious, all right, you up, you doing a little bit more because you know what's going on. You done pull back the covers, you know, and you preparing for it. And preparing for it would be the conscious stage. So the people, you know, who have actively taken a stand and started to do the research opposed to the just listening to other people speak and it being truthful to them. The conscious people in there are the ones that, hey, they're going to make choices. They start to change their appearance. They're a little bit further along in the game, in my opinion, than those that are woke. And then you have the revolutionaries. The revolutionaries pretty much just shutting up and grinding. You know, they're not looking for every platform to talk about how woke they are, or trying to make sure that they present themselves in a certain way. They're really trying to get it to the grassroots of those situations, such as yourself, to try to make sure that there's a platform so we can start to have that element of change. I mean, myself, I consider myself revolutionary. And, I think I went into the belly of the beast, which was the public school system, because that was the one place that our kids had to go by law, and I tried to do my best to educate and uplift them on truth. You know, I taught your curriculum that you wanted me to teach, but I taught it in the context that this child had the opportunity to realize that there was choice and that there was deception within it. So I believe that the three are totally different things, and I don't blame anybody for it because, as Malcolm said, you know, you can't organize the sleeping people. You wake them up, and then you get action. So I'm happy that there's a lot of people woke. I'm so happy that there are so many people that is understanding the message. However, we just come across at a time in which we don't have the organization in terms of a mass level to move them. I mean, for those of us that have seen the spook who sat by the door, I think we're primed for that right now. I really truly think that we are primed for Dan Freeman to come in and organize, quietly organized because you have so many people that agree. They're looking to be fed. They're, you know, this truth is powerful. You know, what we're going through is powerful. We see it. We've been seeing it. We're living it. You get more and more people who are willing to speak out, and maybe it's the age of social media, because I remember when I was coming in this truth to power in the early 2000s in college, you know, I was crazy. I was weird. I was, you know, looked at as crazy. Oh, that was the black power guy. You know, he was the one walking around in red, black, and green, everything. He knew was on his shirt, Bobby Seale, and all these other people that, you know, they didn't know anything about. It was too loud for them, but I wasn't screaming. You know, when I realized that I had to talk with people instead of at them and over them, I realized that I was going to have more mass-up effect. And that's when I changed my tune, but I realized that, okay, certain people are going to already have their ideas and their thoughts made up. You got to talk to those that are still impressionable, because as Dr. Jones was alluding to earlier, and I think it was you that stated, Queen, that there's always going to be people who know what's going on. The whites that are oppressing, or the systems that are oppressing, they're clearly aware that they're doing oppression and they're competing in oppression. And my mind frame has always been, I'm going to go a lot further trying to teach a young black man his possibilities and truth than I am with a Ku Klux Klan that they're doing something that's racist. And I yield with that.
Ashe, thank you, brother. Dr. Jones, Brother Eugene, I yield back to you.
I wholeheartedly agree. I think, you know, Brother Allen, we talk all the time, so it was funny that, you know, we were talking about that. And I think, you know, with the age of social media, I think, you know, I'll just be honest. So I seen something earlier about where's the black media, and I kind of cringe because I know that's a question that, you know, I ask all the time, but I'm finding out, and obviously over the past couple of years, I'm seeing that social media is our media, you know, and whether it's utilizing a good, bad platform, but I think that is giving a voice to the voiceless in a sense, because a lot of times the stories that we see, and can actually articulate and give information on, whether it's you agree or disagree, right, that's waking people up. And, you know, like me and him talk all the time about being responsible on it and just having straight up, downright conversations about it. And like he said, it's also about progressing. So, I mean, obviously it's one thing great to be woke, but are you moving towards that next stage of being conscious? And then are you moving towards the next stage of actually executing and doing something about it? And then everybody don't have to do the same thing, which is what I always tell people, because everybody has their roles. You can do your thing in an institution. I always go back to myself. Even though, you know, I am in corporate America, but you can also have your say in doing things a certain type of way. You just got to be cutting and with it. And what I mean by that, I had a high position in the bank, and so what I would always do all the time was always mentor other young African Americans in that, you know, in where I was at. I also made sure that I gave correct vital information to our customers who looked like me, so that, you know, I mean, obviously, and what tends to happen with that, you know, a lot of times people would not want to hear it, you know, obviously because they're like, well, I don't, you know, I can't apply for this, I can't apply for that. But I would actually have heart-to-heart long sessions because I knew my white counterparts would, because they looked at them as, well, they don't bring no dollars to the bank. But having those conversations, you can be revolutionary in providing information. You can be revolutionary in mentoring kids. You can be revolutionary in having conversations when you're at the park with your kids and you see other black kids. Like, I think that you have different levels of, you can organize book bag drives and, you know, back to school drives and things like that, because you're doing your part. I always talk about, we need to get back to being community and being organized in that sense, because and I always go back to this, when Martin King started his movement, it didn't start with just 3,000 people. It started with just one. And, you know, obviously, great minds think alike and positive minds think alike. And I think that we need to really galvanize and take this moment to get back to that. And with that, I yield.
Dr. Jones, one of the things that the brother just mentioned was Childish Gambino's America. I'm going to play that real quick, and we're going to come back and wrap up tonight's conversation a little bit early. You're listening to Sign of the Times Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by New Power Radio Network. We'll be right back.
We just wanna fly.
I gotta carry him. Yeah, yeah, I'ma go into this. Yeah, yeah, this is Gorilla. Yeah, yeah, I'ma go get the bag. Yeah, yeah, or I'ma get the pad. Yeah, yeah, I'm so cold like, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm so dull like, yeah. We gon' blow like, yeah.
Look how I'm geeking up.
I'm so pretty. I'm on Gucci. I'm so pretty.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm gonna get it.
Watch me move.
This is Belly. Ooh,
yeah.
On my Kodak.
Black.
Ooh, know that.
Yeah,
know
that.
Ooh,
get it.
Ooh,
work it.
100 bands, 100 bands, 100 bands. Contraband. I got the plug on with Hawker.
Whoa.
They gonna find you like Baka. Blah.
America. I just checked my follow and listen. You motherfuckers owe me.
Welcome back to Sign of the Times, everybody. Brother Allen, Brother Eugene, and Dr. Jones, your mic is open. Big, similarities to, the controversy that it's caused as Kanye's statement. But I yield back to you, brothers. Talk about this song a little bit for me.
Me, myself, I'll jump in because I brought it up. To me, it was more of the video. It was a shot at the, this era of what they call, or like they call it, trap music. So the sound, you know, that's pretty much dominating hip hop now is trap music, the Atlanta's, you know, rap scene or whatever. And I ain't gonna go get into all of that, but to me, I'll just say that a lot of what I'm seeing visually from these rappers are very similar to court jesters. And I don't care how that goes over, because that's how I mean it. It's a real caricature, like, you know, it's almost like a competition of who could express themselves the worst. And that's what I'll say that in terms of the visual expression of the video. It kind of goes back to things that's been stated on the show, and primarily that the brother is just doing a, you know, real great job of using his art to find a place in the revolutionary form. I kind of liken it to brother Jordan Peele and Get Out. You know, Get Out was one of the best movies I've ever seen in terms of, you know, the way that it was composed, the way they put it, he put it together, and just the message that it got across. You know, from the representation of the deer, moving up to what we consider the bourgeoisie, leaving our people behind, but, you know, we dying still on life support. Just, you know, and then you have to go back to your people as a way to kill or destroy. The terms of, you know, the deer head was the one that he used to kill off all of the parasitic entities in the house. So, I mean, you know, going back to the song and the music, the visual, I just like to see, you know, a lot of people are playing their role by using their God-given talent to uplift our people in ways in which most people wouldn't think that they would. And I use.
Yeah, one of the last things that he said in the video, and you're right, it does come with, to me, very telling images. And I'm not sure how they resonate with the younger people, but I think that that's who this message is mostly geared toward, to captivate them with the visuals along with the beat and, you know, the lyrics that come along with it. One of the last things he said is, you know, that America owes. And it's my opinion that they really do. And how we go about getting that reparative and restorative justice is going to come down to how hard we're willing to stand and work for it and not continue to be submissive and subjective to our own oppression and therefore becoming willing participants in it. So with that, Dr. Jones, do you have anything you want to wrap up with before we go?
You know, no, not really. I mean, the Chandler Gambino video, you know, I tried to watch it, but it's very difficult for me to watch black folk being executed on film. Very disturbing to me. You know, but it's a new generation, and I'll be one of the first to admit that they passed me by. Not really, and I'm really questioning, and I know that this is age showing, what is the role of the quote-unquote rap star in the revolution, in the uplift of our people? You know, I can clearly see what the contributions of a KRS-One, a Chet D, even an Ice Cube war during my day. I think that they're so far away from, outside of Big Crit, I'll give Crit props, but outside of Crit, I see these guys as being so far removed from anything that could be considered threatening to the establishment or even revolutionary-minded. And it's that decision that in many ways leads me to basically pay no attention whatsoever at all to what it is that they're doing and what they're trying to say. And I yield with that, Queen.
Okay. On that note, I want to remind all of the listeners that tonight's conversation started off, you know, talking about Decarcerate Louisiana and the oppressive conditions that our brothers who are at Angola prison are experiencing now. And as the brother said eloquently in his explanation of how a lot of our brothers end up in places like Angola, simply becoming a product of their environment to a certain extent in a lot of these cases. But that does not mean that even at 30, 40, 50 years old that we can't afford to throw any of our people away. So I just want to give out the information for Louisiana State Penitentiary. The warden there is, hold on just a moment, Daryl Vinoy. The physical address is 17544 Tunica Trace, Angola, Louisiana 70712. And any assistance that you could offer to those who are involved with Decarcerate Louisiana is greatly appreciated. You can find Decarcerate Louisiana on Facebook and as Decarcerate Louisiana on a website, decarceratelouisiana.com, decarceratelouisiana.blogspot.com, and an email, decarceratelouisiana@gmail.com, and then a message number 225-627-3554. Please reach out to us. If you have a loved one that is behind enemy lines and you want to reach out to them and maybe have lost track of where they are, if you reach out to us at Sign of the Times, New Power Radio Network, we definitely can help you reconnect with them because, again, as we always say, we can't afford to forget our brothers and sisters who are behind enemy lines. So with that being said, we're going to go ahead and wrap up tonight's dialogue. Thank you, as always, Dr. Jones, for your commitment. Thank you to Brother Eugene and Brother Allen for joining us and for chiming in. Thank you to Brother Elohim for his chiming in. And thank you to all the listeners who chose to just exchange energy with us and be here and listen and participate that way. So tomorrow night, we may be having a listen and learn session. I do have a community meeting that I need to be at, as well as another one on Saturday to prepare for. So I'm not sure what it's going to be, but it's going to be something. So we'll see everybody tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. In the meantime, if you need us, give us a call, 513-913-2691. 513-913-2691 is my direct number. Sign of the Times, New Power Radio Network, and Queen Tahira on Facebook, at Queen Tahira on Twitter, and Queen_Tahira on Instagram. Until tomorrow night, everybody, we love you, we thank you, and most of all, we appreciate you. We'll see you then. Peace.
I think a lot of what we see with our people today is that sort of fractious reaction to that kind of past that is not that far away. It's not that far away. It's three generations away. It's not that far away.
Okay. I was born within a beautiful black encasement. Valued high enough for thieves to cross deep waters with me. Rather thick skinned in the midst of treason. I never fully appraised the reason why they were so intrigued by me. Now, their seemingly endless sea that rebirths my identity are the dark waters of my inner city. And beneath the surface, you'll find more bloodthirsty sharks than will follow slave ships desiring undesirable black bodies. How graphic is that tragic crime scene? Growing up a child raised in poverty, a child under the perils of peers and police. How I could be shot down by my community, or almost as likely be shot down by the so-called ones sent to protect me. So my black heart speaks more of my origin than my evils. A heart strong enough to survive rain and pain. Rather than being labeled a wicked heart destined for change. From where I come from, I am, by all accounts, a soul survivor. And my black heart is strong, the heart of a rider. And this is my will to live.
Yeah, very, very much. Man, it's deep. You know, that's what I'm saying, how you live through it.
Okay. What is the will to live? Is it the feeling that I had to feel as a child sojourning on this earth for only 14 years? Being unable to connect with peers, isolating yourself,
wrestling for help that wasn't built. As I inhaled in a breath that kept me going when my stripes got way past the concept of real. And dudes that I knew who would kill sent death threats had me hiding the pain inside of ecstasy pills because my palms were sweat and my heart could be heard beating in my ears. As I stood clutching plastic hammers and steel, my tears burned a chill. I made a hole into a black heart twice as cold as winter snow, leaving me to feel the pitch of a world without a soul. Like on that pitch black night when the curse of a bad eyesight could only see the aim of flames bursting out of the dark, nearly killing me. Only 14, yet knee deep in them shark infested waters known as the inner city streets, hounded by thugs and police, not knowing where the guard or higher power was, not knowing who or what to trust. At dusk was kicked up from the battle or the angels and demons fighting inside of me. So I guess that my will to live is my torch burning strong, and their voice from another dimension telling me to hold on in the midst of the thoughts of suicide. When the cosmic forces collide and the powers that be plotting, playing genocide against my kind, I realize that on a deeper level, the will to live is also my will to survive.
I mean, if you're just not made of more compassionate stuff, how do you even, you know, how do you even have the faith and the belief that there is a God and that the goodness does exist and that, you know, I just have to hang on to that and try to move forward, although everything in my life is devastation.